What's up? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast. My name is Jake Crumpler. I'll be your host for this edition of the podcast. Today is August 9th. Let's look at every single start from August 7th. After undergoing Tommy John surgery midway through the 2025 campaign, Jackson Jobe vanished for over a year as he recovered from the invasive elbow surgery. The former top pitching prospect and third overall pick in 2021 successfully made his return to a major league mound, pulling off a disappearing act. In his 2026 debut in San Francisco, Jobe went five shutout innings, allowing just one hit and one walk while striking out four, showcasing the exciting stuff that had us so excited about him last year. The results were not only better than we expected, but they were almost better than anything Jobe did in his first 10 starts of his career back in 2025. Just 10 days into being 24 years old, Jobe has an electric right arm from which he unleashed lightning bolt fastballs reaching upwards of 100 miles per hour, sitting atop the zone like Zeus in Olympus. The four-seamer rains down on hitters, overwhelming them into swinging and missing. The fastball induced five whiffs and returned 72% strikes as Jobe consistently and effectively dotted it upstairs. The extra 1-2-2 ticks to average 98 to 99 miles per hour on the fastball are likely a product of adrenaline from his return to the big leagues, but with 17 inches of vert and 1.1 hava, with below average 6.1 feet of extension, the pitch still has excellent shape, and it's still going to dominate at 96 to 97 miles per hour if that velocity doesn't stick. The fastball's sidekick is a nasty slider that located glove side all game. All but three of the 18 breakers that Jobe threw landed on the glove side third of the zone or off of it. And at 90 miles per hour, the pristine command allowed the pitch to return 78% strikes, and I expect it to be more of a whiff offering moving forward after returning just two whiffs on Saturday. That will likely occur as he gets stretched out and he nails out down the command, getting it more low and glove side on that corner of the zone instead of off of the edge. The tertiary offerings are a 96 to 97 mile per hour sinker that assists in the strike department against right-handed batters, an unwieldy 85 to 86 mile per hour changeup hunting whiffs to left-handed batters, and a chaotic 82 mile per hour curveball looking to invest in free real estate by stealing called strikes. Jobe does not need exceptional support for his 1-2 punch. He's a guy that can be like Jared Jones or Chase Burns with his elite 1-2 punch. But as long as he's able to find pitches to hold up his strike rate when he struggles to find the zone with the fastball or the slider, or find pitches that can find a few extra whiffs when batters key into his attack and are able to hit the fastball and slider, and he can turn to that changeup or that curveball to find some whiffs, I think he's going to dominate most offenses like we saw him do against the Giants on Saturday. The concerns moving forward with Jobe are how consistently he'll be able to command his mouth-watering stuff and what his workload looks like the rest of the way. In 2025, Jobe walked 12% of the batters he faced, often struggling to find the zone with his erratic command. If he can keep pulling off the Blake Snell blueprint, or even just get his fastball upstairs and his slider glove side at will like we saw on Saturday, the walks will likely not be an issue. And with the Tigers still in the playoff race, they have a 27% chance to make the playoffs according to FanGraphs. They're likely to rely on Jobe for important innings down the stretch. The Tigers will remain cautious, but if Jobe can get into the Jared Jones range of 75 to 85 pitches every start, that's pretty interesting. Jared Jones and Jackson Jobe have the same initials, but if he can get into that 75 to 85 pitch range every start, I think he'll consistently set himself up for wins with decent volume in the strikeout department. Jobe gets the White Sox before heading to Pittsburgh and hosting the Rays. It's not the biggest challenge, but we'll surely gain a better understanding of Jobe's ceiling and floor over the next couple of weeks. I'm targeting his immense ceiling, grabbing him everywhere and riding this out until we see signs of him being a guy with poor execution and awesome stuff. He may be a hipster moving forward, a headache-inducing pitcher that stifles the entire roster, but it's worth the risk to give him a shot to rid himself of that label because of how immense Jobe's ceiling is. Now let's see how every other starting pitcher did on Saturday. Sandy Alcantara versus the Angels, 7 innings, no earned, 3 hits, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts, and Sandy keeps crushing. That's 3 straight scoreless starts, totaling 20 innings. Sandy's thrown plenty of strikes, and he's inducing tons of weak contact, but most importantly, the whiffs are flowing as he's induced double-digit whiffs in 11 of his last 12 starts, during which he has a 2.43 ERA. So not only is he a guy that's going to get a good amount of weak contact to get those outs on balls in play to be efficient, to allow him to pitch deep in the ball games and throw plenty of strikes to keep him efficient and give him a chance to avoid free passes. But he's also somebody that's going to get you a decent amount of strikeouts while he's inducing whiffs. This is the Sandy Alcantara we know and love. Next, we have Brandon Pfaadt versus the Dodgers. 7 shutout innings, 2 hits, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts. And who knew that the Dodgers' kryptonite would be a starter who spent 2 months pitching out of the bullpen and in the minors. Pfaadt survived the star-studded lineup in mid-June and one-upped himself with his best start of the year on Saturday. Pfaadt's approach has adapted to the lineup he faces on a given night, sometimes featuring a kitchen sink approach with 6 pitches at 10% or more usage. Other times, he's leaning on his former approach of sinker and sweepers. And on Saturday, he relied on 4-seamers and changeups more than 60% of the time, which is something we've seen him break out here and there. His changeup command was dope, low and arm side, and 4-seamers consistently jammed left-handed batters, while right-handed batters saw more than half of the pitches against them find the zone, which sometimes works against the Dodgers, who have been surprisingly patient this year. So if you're willing to throw enough pitches in the zone, you can get lucky getting away with those pitches in the zone, then you can dominate the Dodgers from time to time. Pfaadt is making the most of his underwhelming repertoire, but he's fanned just 12% of the batters he's faced in 8 starts since returning to the majors in June. That pitch to contact approach is unlikely to repeat the 1.32 ERA and 0.97 WHIP he's had during that time, even if he does continue to produce 60% or more weak contact. If you want to Vargas rule this with Brandon Pfaadt, that's fine, but he's a questionable start in Atlanta next. Next, we got Bubba Chandler versus the Mets. 6 shutout innings, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts. And no, I can't be tempted like this anymore. Chandler's stuff is so dope, but he's failed to command it effectively to maximize its effectiveness, making him a guy who with poor execution and awesome stuff, and obviously a hipster. Those labels and his results make him easy to avoid until he comes out for outlier outings like this one, where he displays a different approach, better stuff, or improved command that get me unnecessarily excited. And I say unnecessarily because he inevitably reverts to being frustrating in the next start. And if you're not going to break out this year, I just wish Chandler would be quiet about his potential so we can get a huge discount this draft season. Just sort of phone it in the rest of the way so your numbers look terrible and then we get a huge discount in draft season. But Chandler keeps doing things that keep us interested and keep asking the question, keep forcing us to ask the question, has he finally turned a corner? I feel like every time he turns a corner, he just realizes he's going the wrong way and he doesn't maintain whatever gains he had in that previous start. On Saturday, Chandler spotted 4-seamers and sinkers upstairs exceptionally, and his new cut slider, glove side, and in the zone. And if he could do that every time, I think he'd be dope. Unfortunately, he can't do that every time, but boy, do I wish he could. Next, we have Yoshinobu Yamamoto in Arizona. 5 2/3 scoreless innings, 3 hits, 3 walks, 6 strikeouts. And ace is going to ace for a Philly as he was just 1 out away from a quality start. The lack of a quality start and the sub 24% strikeout rate on the season are frustrating, a little bit underwhelming from Yamamoto, but the dude has 11 wins, a 2.65 ERA, and a 0.89 WHIP through 21 starts. And there's no question that that is ace level production from Yamamoto. Next, we got Casey Legumina in Seattle. 1 1/3 innings, no earned, 1 hit, no walks, 1 strikeouts. Legumina opened like a string bean for a Rays bullpen game, and let's keep it moving. Next, we got Michael King versus the Astros. 6 innings, 1 earned, 3 hits, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. It's difficult to be disappointed with King's production this year. He's got great ratios, especially given the uncertainty that accompanied him entering the season after he did not look spectacular returning from an injury-shortened campaign. The ratios are great, but he hasn't been someone to rely upon for strikeouts, making him a Toby on the season. He may be changing that narrative, though, as he's fanned 24% of the batters he's faced in four second-half starts. This was a guy with a 21% strikeout rate in the first half. A small uptick, but definitely a noticeable one. And it's supported by three games of 15 or more whiffs in the second half, something he did just once in his first 19 starts of the season. One thing to keep an eye on for King has been an extra tick of fastball velocity, a harder sweeper, and noticeably improved pitch shapes. Sinkers and changeups are rising and running more. Sweepers are rising and cutting more, and four-seamers are displaying increased vert. And if this isn't a one-night outlier and King's able to wrangle the altered movement of those pitches, he could go on a second-half run that returns his Holly label. Next, we have Kyle Bradish in Texas. Six innings, one earned, five hits, no walks, four strikeouts. I really don't love seeing increased sinker usage and sub 50% strikes from curveballs. And Bradish is going out there every start looking to avoid damage on his heaters to allow his elite breakers to shine. So fastball reliance is always a bad sign, indicative of a lack of secondary feel. He was really lucky that sliders earned chases on 57% of offerings out of the zone, as its command was slightly off as well. Breakers combined for a mere 18% zone rate, as he bounced a ton of curveballs and sliders fell just below the zone. And their ability to still induce 10 whiffs speaks to just how nasty those breakers are. Like the crazy pet hamster we're afraid to take out of his cage, Bradish is someone we send out there every week hoping he won't hurt us. Next, we have Landon Roop versus the Tigers. 5 1/3 innings, one earned, two hits, five walks, three strikeouts. And Roop has misplaced the precision that allowed him to excel in the first half. His command is completely gone. He bounced back after allowing nine runs across his previous two starts, but the walks remained, as Roop has now doled out 12 free passes across his past three starts, which is his worst three-start stretch of the year. Saturday's free pass frenzy sort of just got out of hand in a disastrous sixth frame in which Roop walked three of the first four batters he faced before being lifted. I'm willing to write that off as a brief mechanics malfunction. The overall command and pitch separation remain, allowing us to cling to the hope that he's just a tweak away from getting back on track. Rocky Road is up next, and that may be the perfect remedy to get Roop back on track. Next, we have Andrew Alvarez versus the Reds. 5 1/3 innings, one earned, three hits, one walk, two strikeouts, and a southpaw with a big curve. And I think Koufax is playing some favorites. That's 26 outs on 32 balls in play in Alvarez's first two starts since returning to the rotation in August. Koufax has his back for sure. The fortunate batted ball luck has made Alvarez efficient enough to reach and surpass the sixth frame in both starts, something he'd only done once in his first 15 outings of the year. There's definitely deep league streaming potential for Alvarez in Queens and in Arlington up next, but I've got my eyes set on Rocky Road in late August. Next, we've got George Kirby versus the Rays. 5 innings, one earned, four hits, two walks, two strikeouts. The line's pretty underwhelming, but Kirby's pitch separation was something to take note of. He nailed sweepers arm side, kept four-seamers upstairs, and nearly got sinkers inside right-handed batters, while left-handed batters were jammed up and in by four-seamers and sinkers as sweepers looked to sneak in the front door and changeups and curveballs hunted for whiffs low and arm side. This might be the most promising command we've seen from Kirby all year. There's definitely some polish needed to return results that get us pumped, as four-seamers went sub 50% strikes and secondaries returned just 25% CSW against left-handed batters. But this is certainly a step in the right direction for George Kirby. Next, we have Jacob DeGrom versus the Orioles. 5 innings, one earned, three hits, one walk, and nine strikeouts. He induced 13 whiffs with 33% CSW across 82 pitches. And all I got to say is ace is going to ace. That's more like it. Don't question the DeGrominator. Next, we have Cal Freeland in St. Louis. 4 1/3 innings, one earned, five hits, three walks, three strikeouts. And there was a chance that Freeland made this work outside of Coors after tossing a complete game in his last start, but curveballs didn't have the same effect they had in Denver, with a 3% swinging strike rate and just 55% strikes. So all I got to say here is cool story, bro. Next, we got Gerrit Cole versus the Braves. 7 innings, two earned, six hits, no walks, nine strikeouts, and ace is going to ace. And isn't that fitting? A King Cole for Gerrit Cole. He earned the award that's named after him, and it but it wasn't the typical overwhelming performance with a ton of whiffs that we usually see from Cole. Rather, four seamers sat low and curveballs landed high, combining to steal 20 called strikes. That seems pretty lucky, and it's definitely not the approach I want to see from a guy who should be looking to pull off the Blake Snell blueprint, which would be the reverse of what we saw here. We want to see those breakers low and the fastballs upstairs. I'm a little bit concerned, too, about Cole maintaining his ace is going to ace tag when he's induced double-digit whiffs in just 5 of his 14 starts this year. That's not really conducive to strikeouts moving forward. We're going to keep starting him regardless, but it's something to keep an eye on, maybe just something to keep in the back of your mind. And next, we'll talk about Anthony Kay, Gage Jump, Gavin Williams, and the rest of the starters from Saturday's games. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on the Plus Pitch Podcast. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here talking starting pitching. Anthony Kay versus the Guardians. 6 innings, 2 earned, 6 hits, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts. That's more than okay from Anthony Kay. We got Anthony in 4K as he tossed 5 1/3 scoreless frames with 4 strikeouts before serving up his only 2 extra base hits of the game, a double followed by a 2-run home run. And that's a careful Icarus for Anthony Kay. Kay's harder 92 to 93 mile per hour cutter has been great since late June, and it's allowed him to neutralize right-handed batters. He's throwing it harder, and it's become a pitch that's allowed him to produce more weak contact and find more whiffs. And as long as Kay commands changeups low and throws some effective breakers in concert with that harder cutter, he's going to be a reliable Toby that we can stream against bottom third offenses. The Tigers are up next for Anthony Kay, and they're ranked 13th in WRC Plus against southpaws. And that's a bit too borderline for me in standard leagues, but it's all systems go in deep leagues for Anthony Kay against the Tigers. Next, we have Gage Jump in Boston. 6 innings, 2 earned, 6 hits, 2 walks, 11 strikeouts, and 19 whiffs as he earned the gallows pole. Gage's performance have been jumping all over the place. He's allowed 5+ runs in half of his last 8 starts, but he's also racked up 7 or more strikeouts in half of them as well. It's hard to know when Jump is going to blow up and which starts he's going to induce a bunch of strikeouts. And I wish I could just say avoid Jump at home and start him on the road, but that approach doesn't appear consistent as he's gotten blown up at home and he blows up despite piling up the punch outs. It's not like a consistent thing where I can say he's better at home or he's better on the road and he's worse at home. We may be able to forget his recent struggles altogether though, as he locked in on Saturday, recovering his lost velocity with the second highest four seamer mark of the year. And he threw plenty of strikes with his second highest strike rate of the year. I think it was at 69%. And he expanded his arsenal to take pressure off his four seamer, all of which led to a career high 11 strikeouts from Gage Jump, as well as the gallows pole. That's enough for me to trust Gage Jump in Kansas City next Wednesday, but it's best avoiding him hosting Texas in Sacra Verde this week, as they're a top 5 offense against southpaws. Next, we have Gavin Williams on the south side of Chicago. 5 2/3 innings, 2 earned, 3 hits, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts. Ace is going to watch their strikeout streak come to an end. I love streaks of all kinds, and I'm super disappointed to see this one end just one start shy of history. Well on his way to a sixth straight start of double-digit strikeouts. That's a tongue twister. Williams struggled facing the lineup a third time through. Sam Antonacci really wore him down, popping out to end a 9-pitch battle, preceding a center cut sinker to Munetaka Murakami, which got turned around for a home run. That was followed by an 8-pitch at bat that resulted in a deflected single on a well-placed single sweeper low and away. And then subsequently a strikeout that took 7 pitches to record. The White Sox were absolutely grinding it out against Gavin Williams in the 6th inning, leading to 27 pitches in that inning and his removal from the game, only for an inherited runner to come around to score to give him 2 earned runs on the outing. Nonetheless, Gavin Williams is still throwing harder. He's still throwing 4-seamers more often than sinkers, and he's throwing effective sweepers. He has not lost his ace. He's going to ace tag just yet. Next, we have Max Scherzer in Philadelphia, 5 1/3 innings, 2 earned, 5 hits, no walks, 4 strikeouts. And Scherzer is grinding through the final starts of his legendary career in an effort to climb the all-time strikeouts leaderboard. With this start, Mad Max surpassed the big train, Walter Johnson, placing him inside the top 10 with 3,516 career strikeouts. Ninth overall isn't out of reach either, as Scherzer needs just 19 more punchouts to surpass Gaylord Perry. Next, we have Peter Lambert in San Diego, 5 innings, 2 earned, 5 hits, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts. It was a bit of a bamboozling in the first as Lambert walked 2 batters, but he escaped the jam by trading a run for 2 outs and closing out the inning with a strikeout. I wish he recorded more than a pair of punch outs the rest of the way, but a summer low 27% put away rate is to blame for the lack of strikeouts here from Lambert, not necessarily a lack of ability or stuff. Lambert has become a reliable Holly with a 2.29 ERA, 1.09 whip, and a 27% strikeout rate since the beginning of June, and he deserves to be started without question moving forward. Next, we have Aaron Nola versus the Blue Jays, 5 innings, 2 earned, 6 hits, 2 walks, and 8 strikeouts. And I'd love to say live every day like it's Nola Day, but that would mean being as confounding as possible so that people have no clue what to do with you. Nola's curveball is dope, and sometimes it's enough to carry him through 5 productive frames. The 5 frames woods have been difficult for Nola to navigate this year, so he hasn't had many fantasy managers grabbing his hand to follow him through the forest foliage. Let's blame this one on the lowly Blue Jays offense and avoid Nola moving forward. Next, we have Chris Sale in the Bronx, 6 innings, 3 earned, 5 hits, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts. And ace is going to ace for a poor quality start and a dusty donut. We've got to be happy with the strikeouts that Chris salvaged from this yard sale. Next, Seth Lugo versus the Cubs, 6 innings, 3 earned, 5 hits, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, and another successful surgery as Dr. Lugo sliced and diced the Cubs for a poor quality start. There's no clear approach or spectacular command, but Lugo is a master at sequencing his deep 7-pitch kitchen sink arsenal to produce enough weak contact to survive 6 frames. It makes him a reliable option in quality start leagues and someone to avoid in standard leagues. If you're not worried about strikeouts or ratios and you're just looking for a desperate win, give Lugo a chance in Anaheim next. But for the rest of y'all, just leave him on the wire. Next, we have Taj Bradley in Milwaukee, 5 innings, 3 earned, 5 hits, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts. And like an old gaming system, Bradley's command can turn off at any moment. He dominated for 8 straight starts before last start's 4-walk, sub 60% strike rate four-seamer and 40% strike rate splitter, which is a clear indicator that his command has gone. He locked in his 4-seamer on Saturday with 78% strikes on the heater, but he lost his cutter in the process. Curveballs were called upon to provide some strike rate relief, but the hook too was unwieldy as Bradley's secondaries combined for just 52% strikes. When Bradley is dominating, he's returning 60% plus strikes and hopefully 65% plus strikes on 4-seamers, cutters, and splitters. If not, he's susceptible to walks, inefficiency, and batted ball damage. It's that simple with Taj Bradley. It could click back in at any moment, but he won't receive any respite with the Phillies, Braves, and Sacraverde across the next 2 weeks. Given Bradley's dominance this year, I'd give him one more chance to find his command, but be wary that he's displaying signs of oncoming regression. Next, we got Robert Gasser on the opposite side of Taj Bradley against the Twins, 4 2/3 innings, 3 earned, 7 hits, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. And another day, another Brewers southpaw getting manhandled by a Twins lineup that's supposed to struggle against lefties. After Shane Drohan got roughed up on Friday, many turned to Gasser, including myself, for a weekend stream on Saturday. He showed up throwing a tick harder, but he failed to get his 4-seamer upstairs like he needs to pull off the Blake Snell blueprint, leading to 10 base runners. He hit a batter along with that 7 hits and 2 walks, and he had a hook before the 5th inning. Now Gasser heads to Hollywood before hosting the Braves, and he's back to the wire as we've got an electric stove now, not a Gasser one. Next, we got Jake Bennett versus the A's, 5 1/3 innings, 4 earned, 5 hits, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. That's 3 or more runs in 4 straight starts for Bennett immediately after producing 6 straight starts with fewer than 3 runs. He walked multiple batters just once during that streak, but has done so in each of his last three starts. Now, Bennett no longer carries the pristine pitch separation of his four-seamer changeup Blake Snell blueprint approach, and the batted ball fortune that accompanied it has run out of luck. Bennett may be able to get back on track in Pittsburgh next against a lineup that struggles against left-handed pitchers, but their proficiency won't matter if Bennett's unable to recover his command. Next, we got Clay Holmes in Kansas City. Four innings, four earned, six hits, two walks, one strikeout. In his return from the injured list after missing 2 months with a fractured leg resulting from being hit by a comebacker, Holmes did not look his best. It's been a while since he started, so it's easy to forget that he opened the season with eight starts of a 1.86 ERA. There was hope that Holmes' elite ground ball merchant approach would come to Chicago and immediately benefit from the best defensive baseball behind him. Ultimately, he will likely figure things out, and I think that that defense is going to do him a lot of favors to make him a reliable Toby, but he's got to do some of the work himself. You can't just be coming out here with one strikeout. How am I supposed to butter my bread with that? Next, we've got Walbert Urania in Miami. Two and a third innings, four earned, four hits, three walks, two strikeouts. Urania was unable to find the zone with anything but sinkers, and he was singled out while struggling to keep additional runners off base, walking a trio of batters across fewer than a trio of frames. It's disappointing that this came in such a cushy matchup in Miami, but Urania is still throwing 99-plus miles per hour with an elite changeup and emerging sweeper, so we'll write this one off and give him a chance to make up for it against the Rangers next. Next, we've got Chase Burns in our nation's capital. Five and a third innings, five earned, six hits, three walks, six strikeouts. Ace is going to exit the sixth with the bases loaded and watch two inherited runners score for a careful Icarus. I'm a bit concerned that Burns is dealing with the effects of fatigue as he's blown past his career high in innings pitched. He was at 109 and a third innings between the majors and the minors last year, and he's at 124 innings pitched now. After sitting around 98 miles per hour throughout the first half, Burns has been sub 97 miles per hour in each of his four second half starts. As long as he pulls off the Blake Snell blueprint with high fastballs and low sliders, he should excel, but there may be a point where the Reds start skipping his starts or limiting his outings as they have no chance at making the playoffs. And hopefully the reduced velocity doesn't lead to more blow-up outings like this one. Our second to last starter is Matthew Liberatore, who had rocky road, five innings, five earned, nine hits, two walks, three strikeouts. And after shutting out the Blue Jays for six frames in his last start, some semblance of success against rocky road seemed like a foregone conclusion for Liberatore. And well, this is why fantasy baseball has given me trust issues, as Liberatore was unable to take advantage of the cushy matchup against the Rockies. Lastly, we've got Robert Stock in Pittsburgh. Three innings, eight earned, nine hits, five walks, four strikeouts. Disaster outing for Robert Stock. The Pirates are a tough offense, and even with dramatically improved stuff in his return to the majors, Stock didn't really stand a chance. Every pitch held a strike rate north of 63%, so the five walks appear to be a collapse of focus or confidence in deep counts from Robert Stock. Hey, I'd also lose focus and confidence if I returned a bonkers 692 BABIP despite 54% weak contact. I still think Stock's improved stuff gives him a chance to be relevant in deeper leagues, especially if the Mets continue to let him start. He'd get the post-deadline Nationals next, and I think that's fine, definitely in NL-only leagues and maybe in 15-team leagues. And before I say goodbye, let's look at our game of the day for Sunday. We'll see Troy Melton square off against Logan Webb. Melton has been electric this year, while Webb has been all reliable. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Plus Pitch Podcast. My name is Jake Crumpler. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. Go over to pitcherlist.com to check out all the great articles and features we have on the site. Read the SP roundup, the accompanying article to this podcast, and tune in again tomorrow to listen to Nick break down every single start from Sunday.